Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Marriage or Martinis. I am Adam, and here's Danielle.
Hi.
Please.
Oh, you'd like me to start?
I'd like you to start.
I was going to start by saying last night, we had a really fun night last night. We really did. We talk about it more later. You'll hear in some of the ads, which
I wanted to throw in there.
Oh, go ahead.
There's a bunch of ads in this episode. Valentine's Day is coming up, and we have some really, really cool companies that we're working with.
I love our sponsors.
I mean, we had so much fun using the product that either we got or delivered or whatever it was. Such cool companies. If you're looking for anything for this Valentine's Day, you will find it in this episode. So listen to the ads, honestly.
Yeah, and when you support our sponsors, you support us.
Yes.
And it's a great way to support us, and we really appreciate it. But as we were recording the episode last night, I remember looking over at you at one point when you were talking, and I thought to myself, how cool is it that we get to sit together and have a conversation with a couple like Bride and Jeremy, who are our guests on today's episode, and just like talk to them and learn about their lifestyle and commiserate and just enjoy being together. They're all the way in Canada, so like thankfully we have Zoom to bring us together. But I just was feeling really lucky that we get to do this and that I get to do this with you. I don't know, just sitting there, it just kind of was like a really cool conversation.
Yeah, it was really cool, number one. Number two, we learned a lot. And number three, I think also, you know, we try to break out of the norm in our own way and try to do things that are maybe a little different, try new and different things that, you know, are not normal.
Trying. It's hard in a pandemic, but we're trying.
But we've tried some during the pandemic.
Yeah, we have. That is true.
So, you know, we're always eager to learn what else is there. What else could we think about? You know, and, you know, having a conversation like we did with them, maybe not to this extent, but, you know, at least we can learn about things that are out there that we would never have known otherwise.
Yeah. And aside from sexually, also their communication style and how they are so in tune with one another and their needs. I learned a lot from them about that, too. So there was a lot about them being a poly couple that I learned about, but it's also just the kind of individuals that they are and the kind of humans that they are, and how they interact with each other that I think I took a lot away from that also. So I think everyone is really going to enjoy this episode. I loved this conversation. I love this couple. They know that they are on this path and they are very true to themselves and trying to be true to each other. And it's really inspiring. And their podcast, the Turn Me On podcast, is a no holds barred conversation about what it is to be a sexual being in the world. Hosted by Jeremy and Bride, a married poly adventurous couple who love to talk to people about sex. The conversation is geared toward getting real about pleasures of the flesh with intelligence, humor, and maybe a little pillow talk. You're really going to love this. Go check out their podcast, Turn Me On, and enjoy. Hi, Bridie. Hi, Jeremy. How are you guys?
You go first, Bride.
I am underslept, but working on the caffeination part. Coming back up for my evening. My bedtime's usually like 8, and I stayed up extra late last night till 9 p.m. And
then
I woke up at midnight and couldn't get back to sleep till 3. I'm all scrambled.
Now, were you doing anything fun for that extra hour?
Jeremy's mom just turned 60. So we were having a 60th birthday dinner over at Jeremy's sister's place, which was really, really nice.
Now,
totally worth staying up late for.
60, and she retired this week as well, which was a big week for her.
Well, Bride did say mum, so we should let everybody know they are from Canada.
Right? I didn't even know you say mum in Canada.
I mom. Say mum, but I thought it was my mom. I grew up in Prince Edward Island, Canada, but my mom lived in England the whole, like pretty much my whole upbringing. So I just thought it was like very British, but I guess Canadians are pretty British.
Jeremy, do you call her mum also?
I call her mom. Okay. Yeah. Or by her first name, Maxine. I sometimes, you know, I don't know if that's like disrespectful in the US, but it's, I think that's kind of common.
No, our niece and nephew call their parents, Mitch and Joanna.
Yeah, but it's not the norm.
No, it is not the norm.
I find it kind of bizarre when we're together and they call them by their names.
Right. Yeah. Right. I don't know.
It would probably be something different if you called them Mitchell, you know,
like
everyone says Mitch, but our son calls me
right.
Mitch.
Or like his middle name also.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mitchell Alexander. Brad, you look good though for being underslept. You do.
It's a webcam and a strategically placed light.
Yeah, you're looking very glowing.
Okay, glowing. Try this. I could try like from underneath.
Nope, much, still good.
Much better. I'm jealous of Jeremy. I'm jealous of your lights because we used to have what Danielle called my stripper lights, where we had like the tape light. What is it called? The
LED.
The LED, where it's like a roll that you just unwind. And I used to change the colors and have fun with it. And Danielle would always get mad at me for that.
I mean, this isn't an ad. I wasn't paid to say this, but I got to say, Hue, like smart lighting, is pretty spectacular for having like a romantic time. And also, like if you want to kind of spice up, like watching a movie or something, and you know, get really into the mood. You know, watching a horror movie and just turn all the reds deep or all the lights deep red. It's you're in for a treat.
I like this.
A little bit of eye damage, but it's fine.
Yeah, fuck it. Whatever.
Well, we had a decorator come and do our whole like this bar room. It was really awesome and beautiful. And we like spent all this money for this bar room. And I walk in the next day and it's like rainbow. And I was like, why the fuck did we have a
decorator?
No,
it wasn't rainbow.
Come?
It was like purples.
Well,
and
it was changing.
Pinks.
The
yeah, it was
were
like,
changing. Yeah.
It was like being in a strip club.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right, and I was sort of like, all right.
That's not what you wanted in your special room, a little red light district?
You know, there's a time and a place. Yeah. But so I've loved learning about you both. Actually, how we learned about you is that I said at the end of 2020, I put out in our Instagram stories, who do you want us to have on in 2021? And a few people said Bride and Jeremy from the Turn Me On podcast.
Oh,
so
cool.
I immediately, you know, searched for you guys and listened to the podcast. And I was excited because, first of all, I think we're different ages. You guys are early 30s.
I'll be 37 next month.
Oh, you'll be 37. Okay. So we're 43. And you know, just I like you guys. It's a different lifestyle and a different which I love. And I don't know, I loved listening to your podcast and hearing you guys just have such cool things to say. I don't know how else to describe it, but I loved it. So I was super excited to have you on. Adam and I, our audience knows, you know, we got married at 24, been monogamous ever since, just kind of the standard of that's what I was told we were supposed to do. And that's what I did. And I had my life all lined up at the age of 22 before I was even married. So it's refreshing to hear a couple who has truly followed your true path for you. And I find that to be really inspiring. So,
yeah, Bridie's, thank you for that. And I got to say, Bridie has always used the phrase, and Bridie, I every time I speak for you, you always correct me. So feel free, just chime in here at any point if I say something that didn't come out of your mouth. But I think the word that you've often used to describe our relationship is like, you know, we've pioneered our own relationship and our own relationship standards and our own boundaries. And you know, I'll come right out and say it, like they don't fit any kind of mold. We have a very like unique bond, and I think for some people it's like, can I swear on this podcast? I didn't even.
No. We have a very young audience. They can't hear.
12.
But I think for some people, you know, it leaves them scratching their fucking heads, and they're like, I don't get it. And I've kind of come to terms with that reaction of people just not understanding it. But I get it, you know, and it works. It works for us.
Sorry to cut you off. Just from where we come from, you know, we're from New Jersey. We come from a very traditional upbringing, a very traditional way of life. You know, we got married very young. Danielle stopped working when we had kids. You know, I was the sole provider for the family, and we're, you know, a monogamous relationship so far for over 20 years. You know, kind of like, you know, the cogs in the wheel, making things go in the way things are supposed to be. But Danielle and I both have this way of we kind of want to be against the norm, but you know, maybe to a certain extent, like we're so fascinated with what your situation is, we have not gotten to that kind of level, but we're trying to, you know, run against the grain a little bit, do our own
thing. Get out of our comfort zone.
So that's why we want to hear your story and hear what this is all about.
Well, but before we move on, can you just tell us a little bit about your background, your love story, how you met, and what went from there?
Jeremy?
You go. Yeah, you go for it.
Jeremy and I met in 2007. We were both from the East Coast of Canada, but we both ended up in Toronto, Ontario, middle of Canada. Back in 2007, starting our very first year at Ryerson University's theater school. So we met in the acting program at a theater school, and we spent 3 years in the same program. For the first year, we were just kind of friends in other relationships, but our class was small, 20 people in our class. We were very close. We spent a lot of time together. And I think things just sort of naturally developed. I was really drawn to Jeremy because he had these like particular skills that I really felt like skills is the wrong word, but these particular qualities that I felt were lacking in my relationship at the time. And like just things that I, you know, you can't be everything. Things that I wanted in a partner to like share my life with. And some of those things were
juggling. I was really good at juggling. What else? What else, Brad? I could,
you can spit farther than anyone.
I got lots of range. Yeah.
No, he's just really funny and keeps things always sort of in the world of humor. And the one thing that comes to mind too is like an ability to celebrate achievements and accomplishments and be proud of them. And that was something that like had been discouraged a lot to me. And so when we met in this acting program that's about performance and vulnerability and putting yourself out there, I was really, I think, attracted to how Jeremy did that and his joy for life, and also in learning about his illness in the first year of school together, and again how he embraced life in the face of having this chronic illness, cystic fibrosis. And I don't know, something sparked there, and then we courted for a couple of years in the after hours of our lengthy school days, and spent all of our spare time together, I think. And then right before Jeremy took off for a year trip, whitewater kayaking and yoga teacher training and just like going out there and accomplishing a bunch of awesome adventurous shit. He did that in place of our fourth year of university. I stayed and I went to school for the fourth year because Jeremy had a scheduling thing where his acting gigs were lining up in such a way that he wasn't going to be able to go to school that year anyway. So we spent right before we spent that year apart, he proposed. And I think, you know, I was 20, 7 when we got married.
Yeah, I was 23.
And you were 23. And yeah. So, and we got engaged the year before that. So you were 22 and I was 26. And I think it was a similar feeling of like, yep, this is what you do. Like you get married. Ooh. And also I was totally in love with Jeremy and wanted to do that. And then a year later from his proposal, we got married and moved back to the East Coast and lived happily ever after, as you know, marriage can be.
Yeah. Fast forward to now, living in different homes, but still deeply in love. One thing I will say though, to add to that story, Brad, which I think you kind of nailed every chapter perfectly, is that I also live with cystic fibrosis, which is a fatal genetic lung disease. And the majority of my young adult life, I had been living with this notion that I wasn't going to live very much past the age of 30. And so when I was 21 and started having feelings for Bridie, it didn't really take long for me to go, okay, well, like, no time to sit around and fucking squander this. I don't want to die without knowing what it's like to be married to someone. And so let's make this happen. You know, like I'm not going to be here long. And I think that kind of played a big part in making that decision to ask you that right before I left for a year. But yeah, which living with that illness has shaped many of the decisions that I've made in my life in terms of like big sort of fork in the road type decisions. And I think has made me quite impulsive and rather spontaneous. So anyway, yeah, I think that was the one piece that I would add there.
What about all the things that you were in love with me before?
Oh, what for? Yeah. So I guess I didn't know I was supposed to add my part to that, but I mean, I think if anyone who's listening, I think they know because they just fell in love with you. I think the thing that stuck out the most when we were at theater school was that you are four years older than me, and you also are from the same, geographically, we're from a very similar place. And I, at that period in time, living in Toronto, you know, Toronto is like a very big city for Canada standards. I think in general, like it's a pretty big city. And both of us were coming from very small places in the world. And there was a comfort that I found in you, in sharing this similarity between the two of us, of coming from somewhere so familiar. And you know, there, you were home, you were like a slice of home in this big city. And then on top of that, you were also, there was like, you were very, you were quite the opposite from me. You're very mysterious. You were very quiet. You were very, but you were also like wicked smart, you know? And so like, there was these things that there was just a lot of intrigue in, to how your brain worked. I feel like I've learned quite a lot from you back then and even still today. And I think that's one thing that played a big role in it, you know. So you here's the through line. You were helping me through a really rough time when I got to Toronto. I don't know if you remember this, but I was having a hard time being in this new city. And the way that you helped me through it, that's one thing that's been consistent throughout this entire relationship, is that, you know, when I'm having a hard time, you are really good at helping me through that. And even when it comes to like, when I'm having a hard time with my other relationship, you know, it's like, you care about humans. You care about people. And so there's this like piece of you that's like, well, you know, if you're hurting and this other person's hurting, I want to help. I want to be there to make sure that you're both supported and both happy. And yeah. Does that answer your question there, Brad?
That'll do. God. That'll do for today.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Okay.
Wow. What about me?
Well, there was.
When is it my turn?
There was a few things in there I think that we have a lot of questions about.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
But wait. Oh, before you do that, we need to take a break.
Oh, we need to take a break.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll be right back because we have so many questions. And fuck you, number one, for sounding so romantic. Because
every guy out there is like, motherfucker, yeah, turn it off.
Exactly. All right. We'll be right back.
I haven't ordered flowers in so long because I am the type of person who gets nervous if I order for someone else, that when it gets there, it's actually not going to look like it looked in the picture. And that's happened to me before. I sent your mom flowers a few years back and I went to her house later in the day and I saw the bouquet that I had sent her and I was mortified because I was expecting it to be this big, beautiful bouquet. And I got there and they were like half dead flowers and I was pissed.
I do remember that too. And I remember the other day you got really excited because you sent me a picture of these flowers that you saw. And I said, well, they're beautiful. Let's see what happens when they actually get to our house.
Right. Eau à la Rose is a flower company like I've never used before. They sent me a picture of my actual bouquet right before it was shipped so that I could be sure that what I was getting or what maybe I was sending to somebody else is actually what I ordered. Eau à la Rose creates unique and elegant bouquets inspired by their founder's Parisian roots. With their in-house team of talented floral designers, the company works exclusively with eco-friendly farms in Ecuador, Colombia, and the Netherlands that harvest the highest quality flowers. Eau à la Rose is all about providing an exceptional customer experience, and that's exactly what it was. I will never use another flower company again. They were amazing, and I promise you that they really were as beautiful and as fresh. I posted about them a bunch on Instagram, and it's 9 days later. They still look great. They send updates at every step, and each bouquet is in an exclusive and chic packaging. The box that it arrives in is so cute, and my favorite part is I didn't have to put pants on and go to the door. They just deliver the box. There's no delivery person, so you have to worry about getting up and tipping someone, even if you weren't expecting a delivery, because when you get delivered flowers, you're not usually expecting it, and then you feel terrible if you don't have any cash to tip. That doesn't happen with Eau à la Rose. They have same-day delivery in New York City, Chicago, and Philadelphia, and next day delivery everywhere else in the U.S. Head to odealarose.com, that's odealarose.com, and put in promo code MNM for 10% off your Valentine's Day or Just Because order today. odealarose.com, MNM for 10% off. A few weeks ago, we did our episode about feeling really disconnected, and we have, and I get so many messages from people saying it's the same with my spouse and me, that we are feeling really disconnected right now also. And last night, we did something different, something that we've never done before. We did a date box by Happily, where they send you a box every month that has all the components you need for a date night. So you literally have to do no planning. You don't have to worry about getting a babysitter or anything because you're right at home. And it's perfect, especially for the pandemic. We had a great night.
We did. And it's funny that we're disconnected and we're home with each other all the time. Mm-hmm. We don't go anywhere. We don't do anything, but we're still disconnected. It kind of gets, you know, monotonous. We have nothing to do.
Right.
So we just fall into this routine. But this date night box was really so much fun because we played a game.
Yep.
We made a s'mores dip.
We did.
I made a candle.
You did. And it smelled great.
I mean, in one night. And this just all came in this one little box that was just set up for our date.
We had a really good time. And amazing. Then afterwards, you might have gotten a little something, something.
Oh, I think you got a little something.
I got a little something, something too. Yeah. It was a really fun night. I can't recommend it enough. Happily does a great job of just giving you all the components so that you don't have to worry about it. And you have a stress-free, nice night together.
Head over to thehappily.co. thehappily.co. Use our promo code MNM for 50% off your first box. That's thehappily.co. Bridgestone.co. Use promo code MNM for 50% off your first box.
I wanted to ask you, your love story is awesome. Love it. I want to know from the beginning, was your plan to just sort of live this monogamous lifestyle, or we'll talk about Freudian slip, but it's true. Or was it to be, I mean, you guys are so dynamic and you have such a range of, you know, this relationship that you're now poly. Was that the plan from the beginning, or is that something that happened along the way?
Well, first, I think explain that.
Polly?
Yeah, if anybody, you know, anyone who's listening, you want to give a quick, if they don't understand, sure. Because I don't.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah sure. So polyamory is the is a type of relationship in where the folks who identify as polyamorous are open to and consensual to the possibility of being in love and having relationships with more than one person. So, you know, Brady and I are married and have been for almost 10 years, coming up on 10 years this year. And, but we also have other partners. I have another lifelong partner. Bridie also is seeing someone who's, you know, I think it's probably safe to say you two will be together for the rest of your lives unless something crazy happens.
But, whatever that means.
Yeah, I mean, whatever that means. Yeah, honestly. But yeah, I guess to answer your first question, it definitely not. There was no. This was so off. I mean, I'll speak for myself. This was so off my radar. Even the notion of polyamory, like that wasn't even, I don't even think I knew the term when we first started dating, when we were married. Like it was so outside of the realm of possibility for myself.
Mm-hmm. Does that explain polyamory for you, Adam?
Yeah,
totally. I just didn't know what your situation, we've had polyamory experts on before, so I kind of get the gist of what it's about.
Right.
I just kind of wanted to know your situation.
Yeah, everyone is so unique.
Yeah.
Totally, and that's like the biggest thing is like, it's a umbrella term, and mm-hmm. there are many configurations of it underneath.
But you're only married to each other, is that correct?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think legally you can. No.
No, so that would be
and you know,
polygamy.
Canada, you never know.
Yeah. Oh, right.
That would be considered polygamy, which is illegal.
Not to be confused.
Yeah.
But yeah, that brought up a question that I had, which why get married? Why, you know, so when it comes down to everything, it's you two, and then you have these, you know, separate lives going on. What's the point of the marriage for the two of you?
Yeah, great question. I think like we did it without knowing what it was about. We got married when we were young and before, you know that year where they handed out all the manuals on what marriage is and what conversations you should have, you know, mm-hmm. like that manual. This was before then when we just were like, well, you get married. So
yeah,
we've been there.
You figure it out. Yeah. And
no, we get it. We went through that whole thing. This is, you get married. This is how you get married. This is how your wedding's supposed to be.
Yeah.
This is what it is. And you just kind of go through those trends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, again, like, living with CF was, I think, played a big role in that as well. It was like, it was again, that idea of like, time is wasting. You don't have much of it. Act now. Don't think about it. Just do it. Just do what just follow your gut. Do what feels right in the moment. Now, I'm to this day, you know, 10 years later, I'm still so glad that we are. But if I went back in time with the knowledge that I have now, would I get married again? Like, would I redo it exactly that way? Probably not. to be honest with you, it'd save you a big it would have saved us a huge fucking headache, you know, financially. I mean, but really financially, like that's the big mm-hmm. part of it, which I guess is like a really big part of marriage, right? Is like legally and financially, like that's the, I guess those are the reasons why we get married, on top of the you know, union, the agreement that you are making with, you know, in front of a group of people to establish this idea of love and like everlasting love and commitment and support.
Well, yeah, outside. marriage is an agreement. Yeah, marriage is an agreement and a tax break. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
That's right. Exactly. So like that part, that really nice, wholesome part in front of the family and friends, like that can exist without marriage.
Sure.
Like that doesn't have to, that's just a beautiful additive to the entire agreement, you know? Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. I kind of think of it as like that time, you know, that we got matching tattoos. You know, we don't actually have matching tattoos, but it's like, this seems like a great idea. And then you do it. And then afterwards you go, oh, well, you know, wish I had known that, you know, this doesn't spell eternal love in Chinese letters. But I agree with Jeremy. I don't know, looking back, like if I knew then what I know now, I think there a lot of growing up and a lot of getting older is just realizing like, oh, these boxes I don't fit in these boxes. And as much as possible, being able to redesign those like aspects of your life. And for us, it's our union. And so I would say, you know, we just started discussing an open relationship before we got married. But what ended up happening was baby steps. We went to a club in Toronto that's, you know, sort of like a, I don't want to say a swingers club, but it's like a public sex club, adult club.
It was a sex club. Yeah, it was a sex club.
And kind of dipped our toes in that. And then, you know, and then, so we would dip our toes in just by usually doing something like that or just having a conversation like, what would it be like if we saw other people, and we talk about our jealousy feelings, and eventually one of us would go, yeah, I don't like, I'm at my capacity for discussing this possibility anymore. And the language we've always used to describe it is we shelved it, and it would come off the shelf every now and then, and we dust it off and we talk about it. And that went on for probably 5 years, from the initial conversation till we were, you know, actually 6 years, because we were 5 years married when we decided that we would actually give it a go and start getting physical with other people. Mm-hmm. And
separately,
at the time
it was always going to be separately. It was never going to be together.
Oh, sometimes it was together.
Okay.
It kind of started that way as together. And then, you know, 5 years later, the evolution of the discussion ended up with separate and together, you know, like both of those things were on the table. And yeah, it took us like 5 years to even just begin dipping our toes in.
Well, on our last episode, it was about kinks and fetishes. Mm-hmm. And it came up where I said to Danielle, you know, one thing that when I was doing my research that kind of interested me was, let's have sex in a public place. You know, where other people, like you were just talking about, a sex club or something like that, where everybody is having sex with each other. But it was just in our scenario, me and Danielle, like not with other people getting involved. And it was, you know, she said to me, well, you have to make me feel comfortable about myself to be naked and having sex in front of other people. Is that kind of where it started for you too? Because it sounds very similar, but to offset that, the ramifications of the next day for us would just be too much for our relationship, where if something happened where she went with another guy or another girl, and I went with I or if I went with another girl, the next day would just be, we can't handle this. This is too much for us. Mm. Is that where you guys were in the beginning too?
That's a really good question.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we were. I mean, you know, if I recall correctly, the first time that we went to this club, we had a discussion beforehand where we both came to the agreement that, like, okay, we're going to go in here. We don't know. We don't know what to expect aside from, like, a couple of stories we heard through friends of friends of, like, what the place looks like and, like, what the rules are, and then the information that we could glean off of the website. So, you know, we were kind of walking into a very, you know, talk about getting out of your comfort zone. Like, we were like, fuck, we have no idea what the hell we're about to walk into. Like, so
were you walking in thinking you were going to have sex, or were you walking in thinking you would be voyeurs?
We walked in with the notion that we would have sex with each other, nobody else.
That's what I was.
But it, yeah. Like, just the two of us. And that's exactly what we did. It was like a situation where we found ourselves, you know, we basically took like a 40 minute tour around the place, just kind of like ogling at all the tits and cocks and buttholes and then you know, all the places where people were fucking and all these, you know, it was all so bizarre and so novel and so, it was so wild to see. And then we kind of settled into it and we're like, okay, well, like, let's try. And, you know, we ended up having sex and a bunch of people watched, and then I don't think it lasted that long. We finished and then we were like, okay, well, I guess we go home now. And then, you know, and then we just left. We just went home.
Right.
Did they give you like a goodie bag or anything? Yeah, like a prize as you walked out the door?
No, a medal.
A medal, yeah. Right, yeah. Right. Or a t-shirt, I survived my first public sex.
Yeah.
But Adam, to address what you're talking about, like the aftermath or the moments that you might have to like sort of deal with afterwards, the second time we went to this club, we were like, okay, well, now let's include other people. And it was kind of very loose like that. And we went and we met another couple. So like the downstairs, like a dance floor and a club. And then upstairs is where you go and like remove your clothes and have sex everywhere. But downstairs is just a regular club. And it's where you can kind of like meet people and talk about your like boundaries and talk about what you're comfortable with and what your intentions are. And, you know, before you go get naked. And so this very attractive couple sat down with us. We started chatting. They were into it. But one thing that occurred to me, at least while we were sitting and chatting, I was like, they have it fucking dialed in. Like they know that like no one's penetrating her. She's allowed to kiss other people. They're allowed to touch other people, but like no penetration. And they just kind of laid it all out for us at their table. And then they went up to get a drink and like invite us to the dance floor. And I was like, Jeremy, this is making me feel really uncomfortable. Mm. And we left.
Yeah.
Ghosted them. And we actually sat on the curb outside a couple blocks away and talked about it. And that was a really important part of our process to be able to like recognize when something wasn't working and to be able to go, okay, we're out and we're in this together and we're out of this together. And we learned from that like, yeah, we had a lot more thinking to do about like what we were really comfortable with, and we didn't go back. And not that we wouldn't have, but eventually we moved out of Toronto shortly after, and that club wasn't available to us. So that was kind of the end of the beginning of our foray into like including other people. And then it wasn't again till 5 years later that we were at, like we had other people in our bedroom.
Mm-hmm. So when that happened, was the thought going to be that you were only going to be together with other people, or was it going to be, let's just try all different things?
No, I think at that point it was like together with other people.
Yeah.
And it was like that through all of our conversations until the summer that we actually started being physical with other people. And it actually, we started separately because we were living in different provinces. So we were living about a 3-hour drive away. I was working there. He was working here. And it seemed like actually we were both in a really good, we were in a really good space together. And we were in a space where we felt like we could actually try this, and actually not being in the same province might make it a little bit easier. Like, we'll communicate. When we first started, like day one, the rules were like just flirting, you know? And then the next day it was like, okay, flirting was like kind of fun. So like, what if we like flirt and we can kind of like kiss or make out? And I was like, okay, but no more than one makeout session with the same person. Cause like, yeah, you don't right. want to develop feelings. Yeah. And then literally I would yeah. say our agreement evolved over like pretty quickly over that summer, until we were, you know, we were going on dates with other people separately and sleeping with other people separately. Mm-hmm. And then Jeremy met somebody that he had really strong feelings for. It was starting to happen more regularly that we were each kind of catching feelings for other people. And navigating that, like Jeremy put the kibosh on someone I was dating because he wasn't comfortable with where it was going. And, you know, there were a lot of difficult conversations and challenging moments for sure. But one of our primary goals in doing this was like, we need to read about this. Like, we read books. We needed to be able to communicate.
She sounds just like you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm research. Very, yeah. The research part reading. Of it, I feel yeah. like is the most important part.
Yeah. Yeah. But when it comes down to Bride, but how did, or for both of you, how do you feel initially, you know, Bride, if you have a boyfriend or, you know, girlfriend, whatever it is, you know, and, you know, Jeremy, other, you know, same question for you. How do you feel about each other dating somebody else, maybe for the first time or the second time?
It's really scary. You know, it's a scary thing.
Jealousy has to be a 100%. Huge factor.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a factor that even still to this day is something that comes up. It's different. It comes up in different ways, with a different quality. But early days, yeah, it was really tough. It was really hard. There was a lot of fear, a lot of insecurity, a lot mm-hmm. of but on top of that also a lot of reassurance and a lot of patience and a lot of love. And you know, sometimes we would feel like things are moving too fast. So it's like, okay, we got to pump the brakes or else, you know, we have to do something because right now there's an element to this that isn't working. So what do we need to do so that we both feel like we're on level playing field here and feeling safe? And yeah, like it, you know, it for anyone who's for anyone, I'm sure there are some people out there who just like, and I think they're probably anomalies, like people who just like don't really get jealous. I've never really been jealous. Mm-hmm. But I think those people are rare. And I think that for most people, jealousy is, it's like any other emotion. It's a very normal state of being. It's just like anger. It's just like happiness. It's
sure,
like
but sadness. How has it evolved for you guys? Like in the beginning, I assume the jealousy was off the charts. Mm. I'm just assuming. I'm not saying that's the way it was. But then compared to now, do you see a difference?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Each new thing presents jealousy. Every time something is a first or a new. And I would say in the beginning, the feeling when it arose was like a fiery hot sensation, all encompassing, emotional, and then, you know, when Jeremy got into the kind of the first long term relationship within our relationship, that was really scary. Like the first time he told someone he loved them, the first time I saw him and that partner together with his family at gatherings, there would just be these moments that would like kind of catch me. But for me, the work was going, okay, why do I feel possessive here? I don't own this person. I don't want to be owned by a person. I know what our bond is. I know that him having love for someone else doesn't take away the love that they have for me, because I love multiple people. And the more people I love, it doesn't mean, you know, I have less love to go around. So I would approach it from a really like logical standpoint of like, I want to undo the parts of this like relationship structure that aren't like that don't work for me. So I need to examine the underlying core beliefs I have about relationships, and I'm just going to have to do that. So when those negative, or not to judge it as negative, but when jealousy comes up, I found a lot of relief through going, I don't want to be possessive. I don't want to hold someone that I love like this. Like, you can't go out there and like explore and have feelings or anything that I don't get to share, because that's threatening to me. In our, you know, meditation mindfulness practice, our teacher would say, like, you hold your love with an open palm. So like, it can come and it can go, and there's freedom and there's trust that like, I don't have to possess you to receive and like give you love and appreciate you. And
Yeah. I think to add to that, I'm probably not going to be able to word this correctly, because I haven't thought about it enough, but it's something that's been coming up a little bit for me recently. There's like a familiarity to the jealousy that I manage with Bridie, right? So if I have feelings of jealousy that come up that surround Bridie or our relationship, I'm really familiar with that jealousy. And I'm familiar with how it can be handled. And I'm familiar with how Bridie and I have handled challenging situations in the past, or similar situations in the past. So like, this familiarity, I think, helps with like how I personally manage feelings of jealousy that arise. And the reason I'm saying that is because I'm looking at this and sort of comparing it to jealousy that I'm feeling in my other partnership. So my partner Leah, which is, you know, comparatively to Bridie and I, is a much newer relationship. It feels like I'm reset all over. You know, I need to learn how to manage my jealousy or my insecurity with Leah, because it's not so familiar, and we haven't had, you know, 10 years together where I kind of understand, you know, how we both navigate these waters. And so it's like you sort of, at least for myself, I'm noticing that like, I need to build up the awareness that I have to the jealousy that is created from all the different types of relationships that I have. And I don't think that's like, that is exclusive to like romantic partnerships. You know, it's like we do the same thing in our, you know, sure, professional relationships, in our friendships.
Like, how many relationships have problems where one person is obsessed with their friends and they're out with them every week? I think that's really, you know, whatever the night is that they say is for guys, or, you know, mm-hmm, where guys go out with their friends. I don't know which night it is, but I know that that's a big thing that, you know,
Friday.
Okay. Friday is for the guy. I don't know that it's for
the
guys.
Boys. Yeah.
Luckily he doesn't have any friends. So it's
No. I have like three friends.
He has three
so
friends.
Fine.
Right.
Good.
He's good. Yeah. He's good.
Yeah. You don't need more than that, really.
Totally. Absolutely.
Listen, I don't want more than that. Right. Forget that.
Yeah, right. All right, let's take one more quick break, and we'll be right back. Right. I have to pee so bad.
Okay.
All right.
Some of the favorite messages that I get are from younger couples who tell me that they've listened to the podcast and learned from our mistakes and how they're now doing things differently as a young married couple.
You're welcome.
Right, exactly.
We screw up.
We're
and you
so
benefit.
Glad we screwed up so you could do better. No, that's the whole point.
I know.
Literally the whole point. They make me, these messages make me so happy. And I recently had a woman who messaged me and said, I have been begging my husband to buy me a ring for the past 2 years, that I have been making him feel like he should be saving up and buying me a ring. And after I heard the Modern Gents ad and I saw your pictures of it on Instagram, I decided that we were going to use the money to save to travel instead. And they got a Modern Gents ring.
Brilliant.
Honestly, it was one of the shining moments of my life, mm-hmm. because I made that mistake. And I know how much better for us, not for everybody. Some people, you know, it's not the right decision. It was to use that money for traveling once we sold my ring. And Modern Gents is so gorgeous that it literally looks just like a $10,000 diamond. They're gorgeous. Modern Gents' goal is to make it so couples spend their money on travel and experiences and less on a rock on your finger. That's why they created conflict-free, handcrafted, affordable wedding and engagement rings. Also, during pregnancy, your fingers can swell and you can't fit your regular engagement ring. No problem. Order your size from Modern Gents and wear it until your regular ring fits again. The rings are made of high-quality materials ranging from 925 sterling silver to tungsten carbide. You don't have to worry about your ring rusting or your finger turning green like some cheap costume jewelry. The rings are made from conflict-free materials. That's my favorite part. High-quality diamond stimulants. Diamond stimulants are man-made stones that look just like perfect diamonds and shine like crazy.
Head over to modgents.com. That's modgents.com. Use our promo code MARTINIS18. You'll get 18% off any purchase of $25 or more. That's modgents.com, promo code MARTINIS18. This episode of Marriage or Martinis is sponsored by Best Fiends. My 8-year-old son and I are in constant competition while playing Best Fiends. He's always checking what level I'm on or how many of those cute little characters that you collect along the way. That's one thing that's so great about this game. While there are challenging puzzles, it's a casual game that anyone can play, no matter your age. And Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events, so the game never gets old. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends.
This Valentine's Day is definitely going to be like one we haven't experienced before. There's no going out to dinner in most places, depending on where you live, and, you know, celebrating like that, or gatherings, getting together with people that you love and having a nice big family meal. It's just different, but it's still so important to let the people in our lives know how much we love and miss them. And there are so many great ways to do that. One of the best that I know about is Lovebook. Everyone has a unique love story. The Lovebook book building system lets you tell that story by listing all those special reasons why you love a person. Choose a cover and edit the title. Make your characters look like you. Choose pages and personalize them. Lovebook is fantastic for your significant other, but it's also good for all occasions, anniversaries, birthdays, just because, and thank you. And it's also great for kids to make them, for their grandparents or their teachers or someone special in their life, even friends who they haven't seen in a long time. Our kids all did it and they had a blast and it kept them occupied for hours. And if you aren't someone who wants to sit down for hours and do it, Lovebook's new Express Wizard means creating your book is easier than ever. So head to lovebookonline.com/MNM and get 20% off your order today. That's lovebookonline.com/MNM for 20% off your order. I wanted to transition into the fact that we do have 3 kids, Adam and I, and I think both of our goals has evolved into I want my kids to truly romantically, sexually follow their own path. And I think in many ways we've been good at that. I think, first of all, we are very open. They know we have this podcast. We are open-minded people. We're pretty progressive. But, Brian, it sounds to me from the podcast and stuff like you had a pretty accepting upbringing where you were sort of encouraged to be sexually free. Is that true? No, nope. That is not true. Okay. All right. So I'm wrong in that.
I wouldn't say that to be true, but I will say that, just for context, I grew up in a very nuclear family. But what my stepmother wanted to be was a very nuclear family with my dad, my stepmother, and my four little sisters. But, what it was discluding was the fact that my dad had four other children with four other women, and my mother had other children with other men, and those kinds of other siblings weren't really allowed to be considered in the nuclear family for a long time. So I actually feel like there was quite a lot of emphasis on keeping me busy so that I didn't get sexually active, and also like a bit of a denial of like different family systems that are out there. Cause my family, even though we're actually not nuclear at all, when you zoom out and look at it with all these siblings everywhere, I don't know where I was going with that, but it was discouraged, I guess. It was discouraged from being outside the normal because I grew up in a real small town and my stepmom was really concerned with like how things looked to other people. So I would say the opposite. Like she really had a hard time with our relationship structure evolving.
Okay, because it's to me, it seems like you're so confident in everything that I was just sort of like, bad assumption, but you know, someone must have made her feel growing up confident enough to do that. But my question is, as people who are sort of living now your true, how you feel like is your true path, what do you say to parents who are right now, you know, I listen to what I love Ronan Farrow. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but anyway, he has a podcast and everything. And one of the things that he says is, one day when I have kids, I want them to feel like they can fuck everybody and anybody. And I, without saying that specifically to my kids, I do want them to feel like, yes, their parents are monogamous. And as much as we've had our struggles and everything, this at the moment, we're still only 43, so who knows? Works for us and we love each other and everything, but that does not mean that that is their path. And to raise kids who feel like that, and I think a lot of us do want to raise kids who feel like that, I want them to have healthy relationships. I don't want them to do anything they're uncomfortable with. I don't want them to live somebody else's life and feel like they need to be, you know, poly or into something because someone else tells them to. But what do you think in a household needs to happen to foster that kind of confidence and that kind of reassurance that it's okay to follow your path?
I think my older sister does a really great job with that with her kids. She is my role model when it comes to parenting. And again, I don't have kids and I'm not planning on it, but she's really determined to, I'll give you an example. Her now 12-year-old daughter, probably a couple of years ago, came into the kitchen and said, I don't want to be Flora anymore. I don't want that to be my name anymore. And my sister's response was like, okay, fun. What do you want to be called? And Flora wasn't sure. And Tara was like, well, do you want to go to the record store and like look at some albums and see if you can find some inspiration? Like she just really facilitated her child's curiosity with acceptance and like a yes and kind of attitude. And her children are unique and brilliant. And I'm not saying they're not going to have problems, because they do. Obviously kids need, they need boundaries and they need to understand like those things. But I guess I don't know how to tell you to parent children. I don't know how, but I really admire the way that Tara just kind of approaches those
things. I think another thing that Tara does, which is kind of important to point out here as well, is that not only does she approach parenting with this like yes and enthusiasm, and like it, keeping the doors wide open for exploring curiosity, but she also does a really incredible job of leading by example by showing her children how to deeply, deeply love unconditionally, and to love in a really healthy kind of way. Like she's very emotionally intelligent, and she's also very, I think, you know, I feel like Tara's very brave in the way that she loves, even when, you know, even seeing her go through a separation with her husband, there's like it, that process, which for a lot of children, for a lot of couples, is like a really tumultuous, heated, oftentimes scarring, you know, scenario, especially for kids. To see the way that she has done it with her partner,
partners.
It was none of those things. It was none of those things. You know, that it was yes, these two people who got married and were in love, but are no longer there and are ending the relationship, doing it with such incredible grace, because I mean, for so many different reasons, but one of the big reasons is because they know that the children aren't stupid. You know, they're not blind to what's happening. And they understand that we need to show up and show these kids that, like, just because our marriage doesn't work doesn't mean that the love that we had for one another and continue to have for one another isn't so meaningful, you know, and can continue and evolve, even though it doesn't look like what it looked like for the first 12 years of their lives. She's just like, she's such a role model for how to love, which is something that none of us have been taught. None of us. No,
right.
No,
so
no.
How did that, that's my question is, how did that happen with you guys? If, where did that come from? If it wasn't, you know, from your parents, and honestly, I have to say, I think Adam and I are probably both way more accepting and everything, and progressive and free than our parents were, but that might just come with, you know, it's a different generation now. Mm-hmm. But what do you think that is, and what do you think fosters that?
Acid. I mean, I'm joking, but not really. Like I like psychedelics have played a huge role in my ability to comprehend the capacity of love that we can have for you know, for anyone. I was going to ask you about that.
Talk to me about that, please.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I've ever since I was in university, ever since I met Bridie, I've had a very respectful relationship to drug use in a recreational fashion, but less for partying and more for the, for growth and for change. And there are the, you know, if you're someone who's not familiar with it, there's a lot of studies coming out right now through various different institutions about the long-term benefits that are being seen from the use of things like psilocybin, so mushrooms, MDMA, LSD, and in particular being used to treat things like depression or to treat things like PTSD. And a big part of the treatment there is this rewiring of the neuropathways in your brain. And so, you know, whenever I decided to experiment with drugs, whether that be MDMA or LSD or psilocybin, there was always this sort of awakening that transpired, and the days following that experience, this kind of like this sort of process of integration where I've shifted the ways that I see certain things, and in particular, a lot of times with the relationships that I have, you know, talking about dealing with jealousy, like that was, if you're ever struggling with, I'm not going to condone to drop MDMA, but I will. If you're ever struggling with jealousy with a partner, you know, sit in a bathtub and drop MDMA together and have a conversation, and you'll be pretty shocked with, you know, the outcome. I think
microdosing has become such a thing, like that.
Yeah,
I hear that so often now.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for it. I mean, I've done it for
what
sure.
What is microdosing? I've never heard of that. So not like drug attuned, and not because I don't want to. Can I be honest with you? You talked about it treating anxiety. I have diagnosed OCD, and I'm a very anxious person and everything. That I think is what's holding me back from trying it. I'm so worried it's going to heighten that, and that it's going to make my OCD. You know, once my OCD gets out of control, I can't function. Mm-hmm. And I guess that which is weird, because I mean, I love alcohol and I love letting loose and everything like that. But drugs has always, I guess, been my, you know, my wall, my barrier that I can't.
Which is ironic a little bit, because, you know, drinking alcohol is a downer. It
totally
kind of brings
it, doesn't
it down.
Make, it doesn't yeah. make, it's not logical. It doesn't
no,
make sense.
Like with me, if I go through a day of drinking, the next day I go through like crippling anxiety for like 3 days after. You know, when you're microdosing, from what I've heard, I've never done it myself, it's the opposite. It just kind of takes away the anxiety and relaxes you and makes you see things in a different way. Is mm-hmm. that true? I mean, in your experience?
In my experience, yeah, totally. So personally, I've practiced microdosing. So Danielle, to explain what it is, the idea of microdosing is that you would typically it's done with mushrooms, magic mushrooms, or LSD, and the idea is that you take a very 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 small dose. So you know, an example would be like 1/10 of a dose of LSD, and the idea is that you are taking a dose that is almost non-perceptible. Is that the imperceptible? Imperceptible. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's a lot for my mouth there. Thanks, Brad. imperceptible. Say it one more time, Brad.
Imperceptible.
Yeah, amount of LSD, so that you're not actually tripping, but you are taking with you the slight euphoric feeling, or the more sort of the more clarity that you might feel, or for me, I wasn't using it for anxiety or anything like that. I was microdosing for the creative element of it. So I found that it like sparked this creative side that I know exists within me, but it kind of like cracked me open a little wider than usual. And so, helped me with, you know, with writing or whatever it was I was working with at the time. But yeah, that's microdosing. I find macrodosing, so taking a larger amount in order to have like a pretty psychedelic and like mind altering experience, to be something that is, in terms of like my own mental health and in terms of my own, I don't know, just trying to kind of pull out and see life from a bit of a different vantage point. Uh-huh. To be really, really beneficial. And
is that safe with SSRIs? Because that's what I worry about. Like, I don't know if you're on SSRIs, but I'm always like...
No, I'm not.
Okay, yeah. See, that's my problem. I need to research that. Anybody, if you're out there and you haven't done it and you are an SSRI, that's the thing. It's like, I want to try all this stuff. You know, we always talk about, what is it called? What were we say? Where they go to Peru and they do ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca.
Yeah,
I'm dying to do it. But I feel like I need to reach out to my psychiatrist. And of course, they're going to be like, well, I can't recommend it. So then I'm going to get there and my OCD is going to be like, well, he couldn't recommend it. So must be bad. And
when you
have anxiety, it's like a hard thing to come to terms with.
Yeah.
And that's something that I can't speak to. Like, you know, if someone's on SSRIs, whether or not they should or shouldn't.
I mean, obviously consult your doctor, you know? But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I, the exciting thing about all of this is that we are entering a time where, you know, like 10 years ago, the idea of going down to the local liquor store, at least here in Canada, and I know a lot of places in the US, the idea of going down to the liquor store and buying a pre-rolled joint of marijuana, like that idea was like, what?
Right.
That's bananas. Like, that day is never coming. But that's the reality we live in now. And there is a very good chance in the next, you know, 10 years that we're going to be seeing people who are living with, SSRI resistant depression being prescribed high doses of psilocybin to treat their depression, you know, like that is a very realistic possibility. Mm-hmm. You know, war vets coming back from wherever and suffering from crippling PTSD and being administered with a psychologist, a large dose of MDMA to get through the challenges that they're facing. Like, these are things that are happening right now and being studied, and the results of these studies are kind of like overwhelmingly positive. And so, you know, we're already seeing it in the US. I think Oregon was, or maybe it was just Portland or maybe the whole state of Oregon. I think they decriminalized all drugs across the board.
That makes sense.
We're gonna start seeing these things become more widely available and more science backing it, so that for someone like yourself, Danielle, there is a resource that you have and someone can tell you, hey, this is what we would suggest you try.
Right.
And we are, you know, almost certain that this will have some sort of beneficial outcome for you. So
yeah, I mean, right now, you know, we live in such a litigious society that I feel like a lot of what, you know, I even know, like, when I've discussed other things with my psychiatrist who I really like, but, you know, it's all about, well, I don't want you to sue me. So, it's a lot of that. Right. So it's hard to, but obviously once things are more legalized and everything, it'll be a different situation. Mm-hmm. But I found that to be, and I know you did like a solo trip somewhere in the last few years where you took some time and just took some Quaaludes, I think, and
no, not Quaaludes. that would have been fun, but yes, I did. So it's usually when I solo trip, it's LSD. So I'll go to a cabin or you know, I'll post up in the condo and drop a tab of acid and then away we go. You know, just go have a good time.
Can you let me know next time you're going?
Yeah,
it wouldn't be a solo trip.
No, but I'll take the cabin next door.
Right.
We'll check in on each other. Right. Like, I'm interested.
All right. So for those who don't know, so you guys are recording from separate places right now. I don't know if we discussed that or not on the podcast. Yeah. Okay. So Adam and I actually sleep in separate bedrooms. That has always been a very, I think we said that probably 2.5 years ago when we started the podcast, and it's a very, how could you, don't you love each other? How do you not? It's something that has always worked for us. We need our space. We need our sleep. It started when our daughter was an infant and, you know, and again, Adam was going to work and I wasn't, and it just kind of evolved from there to sometimes I get up at 2 a.m. and I want to watch TV and he's a very late sleeper, or, you know, we're still intimate. We still have all that stuff, but it was a very shock value thing until then we got flooded with, oh my God, thank you for saying that. My husband and I also don't, you know, sleep in the same room and everything. Talk to me about the separate homes and how that happened and what that is like.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, I think it was in the same conversation, you know, 12 years ago when we first started talking about including other people in our relationship that I said, well, what if we had different apartments? How would you feel about that? And Jeremy's response was, people don't do that.
Yeah. I don't feel about that. That's how I feel about that.
And so, so I was like, okay, I guess we're going to live together. And, you know, just this is what people do. So
what made you say that to him? Like, what was the catalyst for that?
I've always
Kurt
liked
Russell
and Goldie Hawn. Yeah.
Why they live in different houses?
Least they did. That was allegedly a thing about their relationship for a while.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Next door to each other, apparently.
Goldie. I didn't know
like,
that.
Like with a pedway between them.
Yeah, did you know that?
No, that I thought they slept on separate boats.
Oh, overboard. Yeah. Good reference.
I just had you know, Jeremy and I tried living together for like a few seconds previous to this. And I was like, get out of my house. And I think,
I
you
get
know,
that.
What's that?
I get that. I understand.
I mean, our relationship literally almost ended. Like I moved
us
in
too.
And we were together. I don't know how long I lived there, but it was like very quickly we were like, we gotta change this. Like we can't live together right now. We need to like familiarize ourselves with each other a little bit more before we do this, because it was disastrous.
And that's a thing that new couples rush into all the time, because it's financially more sustainable to share rent with someone. And so you share rent with your partner, and then you go, oh, what's all this like living together about? And I think, like I just really treasured having that feeling of like going to my partner's place and staying there, or having the option to like stay in my own place and have him there to me. And there was something always kind of something romantic about that, retains a little bit of mystery. You know, I wasn't really interested in lifting the veil on like being watched while I get ready for a date for us, or, you know,
me taking a shit while you're in the shower.
Well, I wanted to say that, but I don't really, you know, I don't like talking about poop. So,
so what happens if one of you, do you ever call each other and you're like, hey, I'm kind of in the mood, can you come over?
Here we go. The plot thickens.
And how far are your houses from each other?
I can
please
walk
tell me next
to
door. That would be perfect.
Yeah, probably like a
20-minute walk.
Okay, that's good enough. Yeah.
But you go ahead. You respond.
Well, I was gonna say that. So this might be kind of similar to you explaining that you know you guys sleep in separate beds and they're being kind of like gasps and awes of like, how does that work? Bridie and I don't call each other up and say I'm in the mood. We haven't been physically intimate in, it's been like a couple of years now, like maybe 2 years. That's no right now. That's no longer a part of our relationship. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that hard, or is that just something that you guys are sort of just like with everything else? Like, this is where we're at right now. And is this something that you're hoping we'll come back to?
Yeah, no, it's not a challenge. It's not like, it's not something that we struggle with. It's what our relationship evolved to. So I am very much sexually intimate with my partner, Leah. And Brady, I'm not going to speak for you, but I know that you and Todd are, very, very intimate as well.
I get banged from time to time.
Yeah. We have very active sex lives, but just not with each other.
And was, you know, that was one of those consistent arguments. We were always fighting about sex in our relationship. I think that's fair to say, Jeremy, wouldn't you?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we had different needs, different interests. The way we sort of evolved sexually was kind of apart in terms of what we were into. And I think that a lot of the way that our relationship has evolved has been removing the parts of the relationship that caused a lot of strife. Our financial interconnectedness also caused a lot of strife. Yeah. So we've been weeding ourselves apart in that way as well. And just to answer a question that I would imagine is either on your minds or your listeners' minds, like, doesn't that feel like you're getting further and further away from being a married couple? And yeah. I feel really strongly that in this like pioneering situation, the future is still like, it makes me nervous. Of course, like I worry about like the legitimacy sometimes of like our relationship. But then I think, you know, we didn't know what marriage was when we got into it. And so we've had to come to a definition for us of what our partnership is and our bond. And I think it has a lot to do with Jeremy's illness, because that's like my commitment is like so based on being there through the whole thing and being a partner for, you know, all the difficult stuff, that in removing the parts of our relationship that were causing a lot of strife, I actually feel like now I actually can be there. Now I can actually be there and there's no resentment and I'm here and I can actually love this person more freely, because all of these needs that weren't getting met in our partnership, I can now get met in other ways and with other people, with my partner, my other long-term partner. And same with Jeremy. Like we recognize that as people, we have a whole community of needs. And the problem with the assumed structure of monogamy is that it often assumes that you're expecting someone else to meet all your needs. And it just didn't work for us that way. And we didn't want to devolve and like go our separate ways because we still love each other. Mm-hmm. So why change it? Our families are connected, like we're family and building our family all the time. I just feel when I feel worried that like we might get too far apart, I just think about those things and I go, no, this is a life partnership, because I'm going to be there to the end. And I know if I go first, that Jeremy's going to be there to the end. And that's what I really need from this relationship. That's what I really need from this partnership.
So do you still see each other physically? Like, do you guys meet up and have coffee or dinner or, I mean, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I love to cook. So I love having Jeremy and Leah over for dinner with Todd and I.
Yeah.
That's like one of my favorite things. You know, Jeremy has a fairly sedentary lifestyle, so I like to invite him on dog walks and hikes. And occasionally he comes, but I think like last night, you know, we hung out all together as a family. My partner Todd was there. His partner Leah was there at Jeremy's mother's 60th birthday. And it was great. And everybody's got their heads wrapped around it pretty much in your family and in mine, sort of less so mine, but.
That's great. Jeremy, how is your health now? Is it pretty good?
Yeah, it's yeah, it is. You know, all things considered.
Good. I'm so
33,
happy to hear
I'm past that 30 year
That's
mark.
That's fantastic.
You know, with the advancements of treatments that have become available for cystic fibrosis, you know, the life expectancy just continues to grow and
awesome.
You know, who knows how long I have left, but right now I feel great. So I've got at least a year. I've got at least a year and probably more like 10, but.
All right. So if Adam and I are going to come to Nova Scotia and visit and get a tour.
Oh, we'll give you the grand tour.
Cause I'm dying to go. And let me tell you, when COVID's over, man, I'm not going to be home for like a year.
Can we go to that club?
Yeah.
Yeah, can we go to that? No.
No?
Well, who knows what it's like in Canada when you're...
In Canada. It's, everything's great.
Right. It's
who cares?
Everything is 10 times better. Although, we're catching up now. We're getting back to speed.
Yeah, that's right. Hey,
we're back in the groove.
By the looks of Dr. Fauci's face, it looks like the stress is being reduced big time.
Is that the best?
Yeah.
He looks like he's 12 again.
Look at him smiling and everything. Oh, that's great. Like,
I love it. Yeah. He's the best. You guys are so awesome. I love that you're just following whatever path you're taking. You both look great and you both, you know, sound great. And I really enjoyed listening to your podcast. I'm going to continue to do so. Can you tell everybody where to find you and, you know, what you have going on?
Yeah. Turn Me On podcast. You can listen to us wherever you find fine podcasts, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you ever feel like reaching out, you can find us on social media at Turn Me On Podcast on Instagram, which I don't know, may or may not exist in the coming future. We have a lot of like really sexy butt pictures on there that we have people submitting to us.
I noticed that.
Really?
But, yes, a lot of butts.
Yeah,
get me on there.
A lot of anonymous butts.
Not a lot of hairy butts on there, just a lot of...
No, I meant get me on there to view, not to be on there.
Yeah, there's a couple hairy butts. But Instagram, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's not a big fan of
bare bums,
we'll say. So,
oh my God, that has been awful, right?
Yeah,
that has been like, you can post about guns, but you can't post about sexual. It's just
sexuality. It's a bummer. But who knows? You know, maybe we'll last. Maybe we won't. We're always teetering on the edge of getting pulled off Instagram.
Yeah,
but
it's very hard.
But if you do listen to the podcast and you do like what you hear and you ever want to reach out to us, you can always reach us. TurnMeOnPodcast@gmail.com.
Great. Well, I hope you guys will come back on and give us an update in a little while. You're so fun to talk to, and our life is super boring, so it's really fun to listen to.
We love talking to other podcasters, and it's really a big treat to talk to another couple.
Well,
and
we are available to talk about our spicy sex life on the Turn Me On podcast anytime you need
absolutely
spicy old couple who sleep in separate
100%,
bedrooms.
100%. Yeah.
We will be your least downloaded podcast episode.
Hey, our audience loves us.
As the old couple who is like, oh,
right.
I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
Missionary tonight. Right. And then...
It'll be the vanilla episode. All right, guys. Thank you so, so much for doing this. And you guys are great. And we wish you both so much good luck. And thank you.
Thank you. You take care out there.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.